Welcome back to Stone Cold Shots, the wrestling podcast where the shots are cold and the takes are hot. Every episode here, we review and recap a wrestling pay-per-view from any promotion, from any time. Before we get to this week's episode, why don't you guys introduce yourselves and tell me what's one thing from the 80s that you think should make a comeback?
Well, I'm the internet darling, Josh Felix Pryor. One thing that I think should make a comeback from the 80s.
Is this like wrestling specifically?
No, or? Just anything.
Okay.
Man, the hair.
Yeah. Mm.
Hair. Sorry, I didn't mean to steal yours.
No, don't worry. Go for
maybe,
it.
Maybe the tassels.
Like your hair or just like hair in general?
You should have seen my hair back in the 80s, man. You wouldn't be laughing so hard. Locks and locks and beautiful locks. Anyway, sorry, I would bring back the hair.
Yeah, my name is Lauren. I'm a regular darling. I would also bring back the hair. I don't know what else there is to the 80s. Like, that's one of my favorite eras of music, but I don't want it to... Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like so many aspects of the 80s have already come back anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. Cold War scare?
No, I'm good.
You really want that to make a comeback?
This is, I really kind of phoned it in with this question. I didn't have a good one. My name's Campbell, and I don't. You know, a while ago they were talking about doing a remake of Big Trouble in Little China with The Rock, and okay. I think that's something that I'd like to see.
Yeah.
Would he be? Would he be? He would be the Kurt Pork Russell. Chuck Express guy.
He would play the truck, the Pork Chop Express. no, I believe he was supposed to be Kurt Russell.
Was he supposed to have a mullet?
I don't know. Maybe. That'd be pretty cool. We could bring back the hair and bring back Big Trouble.
We all get what we want in one movie.
Yeah.
This open is dying on its feet. So let's just get to the episode here. We are talking about NWA Power.
Episode 1,
yeah. We got NWA Power is coming back. That's something from the 80s, right?
And was it called Power back
then? It wasn't called Power.
I was going to say, the NWA, though.
Yes.
This felt like it had Jim Cornette's fucking little greasy double cheese, double bacon fingerprints all over it.
Yeah.
Well, and he is one of the commentators.
Yeah.
So he is very, like, his presence is felt.
Yeah. This is a good throwback, though.
Yeah, like,
from the opening.
In the midst of sort of, like, we had the big NXT and the AEW premieres this month, and we also had this, like, really quiet little NWA show on YouTube that people are abuzz about, so we thought we'd check it out.
Yeah, it has 500,000 views on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's good for them.
It's so cool that they're putting it out for free on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah. How familiar are we with the NWA?
Not at all.
Yeah, not at all. I didn't grow up on the NWA at all. Like, mm-hmm. It was all WWF and later on WCW for me, but NWA was completely outside of my scope.
Yeah, like, I feel like it's that thing that you, like, in, like, recaps or, like fucking, like, whenever WWE does, like, a clip show or whatever, yeah. It's like there's, like, Ric Flair with the belt, or, like, whenever they talk about fucking Dusty Rhodes, he's there with the belt.
Harley Race.
Yeah. We had, like, the Cody-Nick Aldis match at All In.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's the first time I clued into this company ever existing, mm-hmm. was for that.
And
yeah.
Billy Corgan, he did a great job with this, because NWA was definitely a dead brand. I think the last thing I remember hearing before Billy Corgan took it over was Colt Cabana, like, throwing down the belt in the middle of the ring and saying, this, you know, promotion is corrupt and it's dead and it's been dead for a long time. And then it kind of went radio silent. And then Billy Corgan picked it up after the TNA deal went south. And, yeah, like, he's done a great job from the 10 Pounds of Gold series with Nick Aldis. And Nick Aldis was such a great addition for the NWA, mm-hmm. because that guy could be, like, you know, Intercontinental Champion, the WWE, no problem. Mm. He could be, like, a top star in AEW.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the fact that Billy Corgan brought him on, and, you know, by the looks of it, just the show and what I've seen about the signings, I mean, they've brought on some pretty good people to help carry that promotion. So,
yeah. It'll be interesting to see kind of how that plays out, where we are, like, more than, because we're, like, about a month down the road now, mm-hmm. you know? So yeah, we get into this, we got, like, this cool montage, like, opening credits with, this pretty fucking righteous Dokken tune, which is like sick. Also something that could make a comeback from the 80s is Dokken. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know who or what that is. I don't know if that's a person or a band, but I don't know it.
So their band, it was like a vehicle for the guitar player George Lynch. Very well-known shredder. Mm-hmm. But you know, they would have been contemporaries with Van Halen, but a little bit more on like the budgie UFO Tigers of Pantang
cool.
kind of like more like rock band as opposed to like big show. Although, you know, George Lynch had like fucking zebra stripe jumpsuits and like fucking like buzzsaws on his arms.
That's my look.
Music video of him like playing a fucking guitar solo on top of a volcano.
I want Zubas to come back from the 80s.
Oh, Zubas. That's a big
yes,
one.
Yes, me yeah. too.
Yeah. Where was all this?
Change my answer.
Where was all this 6 minutes and 4 seconds ago? All right. We're introduced to our announce team of Jim Cornette and Jim Cornette's son.
Joe Galley?
I didn't catch his name.
Like a generic, what's his name, Todd Grisham kind of looking guy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Looks
I'm
like...
pretty sure his name is Joe Galley.
All right.
Or sure. Galley, but I think it's Galley.
Galley.
Joe Galley. They talk a lot about how they are bringing studio wrestling back.
Finally.
That's like their... If Jim Cornette was the Vince McMahon in his own ear, that's what he would be telling him to say. and we kick things off with a little interview, with a little promo. We have Marquez interviewing Nick Aldis with Camille.
I thought it was a really great promo. I was confused because the last time I had seen Nick Aldis, he was a heel. And in this promo, he seemed like a face. Like, he was talking about how awesome NWA Power is. He was talking up everybody, like, all of the champions. Like, he seemed like a face. And I was like, okay, cool. He's the face of this company. And
yeah. It was a real throwback, this promo. Like, everything from the way Nick Aldis was dressed, to the way he was cutting the promo, to the way he was holding his title.
To like, the way the woman didn't speak at all or have any kind of role.
But he was talking about respect, which was very... It reminded me a lot of like a Nick Bockwinkel or a Harley Race kind of promo where it was like the title was the most prestigious thing and the title was above all else.
They hit on that throughout the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Well, throughout the episode, I suppose. Yeah.
Like the NWA title has like the longest lineage in wrestling, right? Yeah. And it is like... I think that's like the one thing. They don't have like the brand recognition of the WWE. They don't have like the hype or the money of AEW. The thing that they really have to hang their hat on right now is their lineage and yeah. like they're trying to make that brand mean something again. And so I thought it was a pretty good promo that like heel or face, the idea that like you're trying to put over the company.
Yeah.
You know, that like good guy or bad guy, if your goal in cutting a promo is to be like, this company's great, you know, we have like great wrestlers here and I'm the fucking best one
exactly.
of all of them
yeah.
is like that works either way. And it was very throwback, like kind of Ric Flair. He's got his like the clothes I wear, the food on my dining room table is all like paid because I have this belt, like kind of stuff. It was cool. And like I like the set dressing a lot, like
yeah.
the
mm-hmm.
and this is something that like knowing that, like, you know, Cody's history and, like, Dusty Rhodes' history with the NWA is, like, this style of interview and, like, this style of promo is something that I was, like, really hoping that Dynamite would have. Mm-hmm. Like, if Dynamite had sort of, like, the WWE ring presentation with a more of, like, an NWA promo, I think that would help set it apart from WWE
yeah,
a little bit more.
I feel like almost Dynamite needed to go on the production... Like, not obviously, like, to match WWE, but there mm-hmm. needed to be, like, a high-production indie presentation, right?
Sure.
That felt like it was a big network deal.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, watching this, I feel like this for sure has a place, like, in the wrestling, like, landscape right now because it just felt different. It felt special. And, like, in, you know, a land amongst giants, how are you going to separate yourself? I think they did a great job right off the hop.
Oh, yeah.
I do have a very specific feel.
Yeah. I will say... Personally, I thought the promo, like the writing on the promo, whether it was Nick Aldis like wrote that himself or if he was just like flying off the dome or if someone wrote it for him, 10 out of 10. Really, really fantastic.
Really good. Yeah.
Delivery, like he's kind of a guy that like I don't maybe because I haven't watched enough of this, or I haven't seen him wrestle more than like just the match with Cody, it wasn't super convincing for me. I feel like the delivery was like a 7 out of 10, you know? Yeah. Not to step on your toes with the rating systems here. I promise it ends now.
I don't do it at 10, and I just don't do it generic promo ratings. So fill your boots.
Let's get to something that you can rate, huh? We have our first match. We have the Dawsons against Sal Renaro and Billy Buck.
I totally missed the introduction for these two guys, so I had like low-rent budget Bludgeon Brothers against Gold and Purple Pants guys. yeah, it was a squash match.
Yeah, I didn't think it would be just by how it was presented and how the Dawsons were sort of built up. And it was a squash, immediate pin. Mm-hmm. And like Sal Renaro was a huge, like he was a coward.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, all of these things are confusing. I feel like I had a lot of issues throughout this entire episode of me trying to assign heel and face dynamics, mm-hmm. Like from the WWE to this show, and realizing as it went on, I was like, I shouldn't be doing this because they just don't conform to the like extremely regimented heel face dynamic and personality traits that the WWE has, which yeah. is nice. It's refreshing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the Dawsons are straight up heels. Like they're just plain bully heels, but they're put against people who aren't super likable either.
Yeah, and it's like the old NWA style is like, you know, all the bad guys are just like rough and tumble rednecks who, you know, they're in there, they're bruisers.
Well, they are, as Cornette described them, mean motor scooters and bad go-getters.
Motor scooters.
I don't know what the fuck that means.
That's cute.
Yeah, and then they go and they cut a promo after their match. They walk over from the ring to the... They take the 5 steps from the ring to the podium.
The match.
Yeah, they win the match.
And it gets a bald and a half, this one.
Okay, a bald and a half. Well, that's that describes the Dawsons. I thought that the bald Dawson cut a better promo than the Dawson that wasn't bald.
Same.
But that was, that's about it. Like,
it's really not saying much either, because that wasn't a great promo.
Yeah, it was fine. It's yeah. like... It was a little bit kind of, like, more of the same of, like, what Nick Aldis, like, just did of that, like, kind of, like, throwback feel of the promo.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, I kind of get what you're doing here. Like, I think a lot of the thing about this episode is that it's just, like, building expectations of what the brand is going to be like and sort of setting up a couple of players.
Yeah.
More so yeah. than, like, really giving a full fleshed out product with, like, storylines or... Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's again, like, I'm going to keep saying throwback, but, like, this is, like, very reminiscent for me of, like, old school WWF TV, like, a Superstars on a Saturday, because yeah. there'd just be squash matches and then promos and then squash matches and promos.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, like, to sell the pay-per-view.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of the vibe that I get, is that it's, like, they're giving this away for free on YouTube.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a bunch of squash matches, and then all of the guys that have been squashing everybody else will presumably face each other at, like, something that you have to pay money for,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
Which is, like, pretty standard, I think, and, like, makes sense, and, like, is something that, like, that style of booking is something that would, like, maybe the WWE would benefit from right
yeah,
now.
No,
yeah.
No going back for that.
It definitely yeah. is a way of avoiding fatigue and mm-hmm. well, oversaturation yeah. of certain feuds or certain people.
Like, totally. Yeah. And, like, we've already seen every matchup 100 times, so, you know, you can, like, put lipstick on a pig, throw it on a pape.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've seen that pig before, though.
Yeah.
You know?
We get this little weird ad for Austin Idol.
I thought this was great.
This was like a
wrestling college.
This was like a fucking Tim and Eric sketch. I was like waiting for like the other shoe to drop. Yeah. Like it was all set up with no punchline.
It's free real estate.
It's free. Man, check it out. I'm Dr. Steve Austin Idol. The presentation, I understand that they're like going for a very specific like this throwback feel that we keep referencing.
Yeah.
But, like, a lot of it kind of feels like a SNL sketch about wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, like, especially the, like, the pan, the camera pan, like, from the ring and it goes over and that's, like, where the promo booth is. Like, yeah. that's, like, a Simpsons sight gag, you know? Like, there was a lot of stuff that, like, I understand why you're doing this the way that you're doing this and I get what you're going for, but, like, it's just so far removed from what your average wrestling fan is like conditioned to.
Sure.
Or maybe that it just feels like so specifically marketed towards someone who is like twice my age.
I think that's it, right? Like they're actually going for that very specific demographic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they really don't care about anything else. Like they're not trying to like do anything else because they know like they can just run shows in Atlanta.
Yep.
And they're just going to sell out with the same people every week.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. How about this Eli Drake promo?
So I have feelings about it. I don't. Is this purposeful? He is just a Stone Cold Steve Austin copycat? Like he's just a ripoff of Stone Cold? Is that purposeful? Is that acceptable? Like, I don't. That immediately upset me about him.
He was like, for me, like he was a mix between Stone Cold and The Rock.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know.
I mean, I got way more Rock vibes than I got Stone Cold vibes.
No. It was all Stone Cold, especially like even just his delivery. Like I was surprised that the crowd wasn't doing what in between
like,
everything.
Like just because he's from the South and like has.
I don't know where he's from.
Oh, he's got a real good old Southern boy accent.
Right.
Eli Drake.
I didn't really pick up on that, but like it was just his like he says things like he's waiting for the what chant in between.
Mm.
And he like he's wearing a leather vest with his name on it and like I don't know, everything about and like he was just like I'm a real man and I just want to hit people. Like these are all real men and it's just about being a real man. Like that was what like all
and I'm a bionic redneck and I'm about to stomp a mud hole.
I kind of liked the maybe this was just me like projecting, but isn't this like I feel like what wrestling is like you projecting yourself and like mapping like things that you identify with onto certain wrestlers and like things. And I feel like the whole real men thing for me, I was like, he's talking about cosplay. like he was like that whole Eli Drake promo with his baby blues looking right into the camera looking at me sitting on my couch was just him saying like, hey bud, ain't nobody gonna be dressed as Wolverine on this show, like this is for you.
Well, as Cornette says, you got a lot of kids out there pretending to be cosplayers or whatever, right?
Yes, yes.
So I really liked this Eli Drake promo. I thought it was great.
Yeah, me too. I like Eli Drake. I think he's one of those guys that probably could make it in the WWE. A little bit of polishing on the old Eli Drake, and I think he could be a bona fide Stone Cold star.
He has the body for it, I will say that.
Yeah, I was gonna go to the next. Check out the abs. They don't ever quit.
That's a body.
That's a body.
Body, body, body.
So yeah, he gets out here and he has a little match with Caleb Conley. I think this is the point where he just like walks from the studio thing right out to the ring. And it's like, again, it's like more so than anything, like all the wrestling has been good, squash match, full match, like everything that we've seen, I like thought was like very solid, like technical wrestling. It's just like the presentation is so hard for me.
I was going to say, like, how do you feel about no entrances?
I hate it so much, you know? And I could understand, like, for kind of the opening match where it's like, oh, we just had, like, this big promo and now we're jumping live to the action in the ring. You miss the entrances. But, like, no entrances at all, like, with no music, with no, like, I was trying to think if you could have, like, at least, like, maybe if the promo booth was facing the other way so that you had to leave and go through, like, a curtain and at least, like, come out, because I feel like having people watch you cut like a 2-minute promo and then just take
two steps into
the ring is like, so there's no like excitement, there's no build to that.
Well, yeah,
right?
You're not giving the audience any time to cheer for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's zero time for reaction there. It's just, and now I'm here and we're wrestling immediately. Yeah. And it's just,
well, yeah, but I got to hand it to them for the commitment to the bit.
Totally,
know, like, if anything, because that is how they used to do it. It used to be, like, a quick interview, pump up the match quick, get into the ring, have the match, and get your heat in the match, right?
Yeah.
So,
I also felt like, again, just, like, while we're talking about presentation and about, like, production, having audience only on, like, one side of the ring was a little rough. Because it's hard for... I feel like it's hard for them to play to the in-house audience and play to, like, the camera, like, the audience at home.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it any time that they're, like, trying to... It, and they have to, like, walk a line, basically, between not exposing how, like, rinky-dink the setup is and still trying to get good angles on all of the moves happening.
Yeah.
Right? It's like they really have to walk a line there where it's like, okay, like, you know, maybe we need a better angle of this dropkick. But if we do that, then we're going to show that it's just, like, there's just two assholes sitting at a desk, like, 5 feet over there with, like, a shitty curtain behind them, right? Like, it just, like...
It's all by design, though.
It just... It made everything look very cheap. And again, it's a thing where it's, like, I understand that this is, like...
Epic Campbell, Studio Wrestling's back.
Yeah. No kidding, hey? Did this not bother you at all? Like, you're like, Lauren, because I feel like, Josh, you have at least some...
Point of reference.
There's some context for you to like house this in. Whereas, like, I feel like.
But it's interesting to hear you guys talk about it because it's. You guys only know WWE, kind of, right?
Yeah.
Like, besides what we watched on this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting to see because it's like, this is like so far removed.
Yeah. I try not to compare stuff to. I'm going to sound so stupid saying this. I try really hard not to compare things to WWE, but of course I always am. But I don't want to hold it against a company that they don't have as much money or like that they don't have the ability to do the production value that I'm used to. Like,
because WWE is really the gold standard when it comes to production value. Like, their show could be kind of shit.
And but... I don't think that determines how good a story can be and stuff.
Sure, totally.
Like,
sure.
Or how much I love wrestlers. Like, Superkicked, like, just going to that live, I am so behind some of those wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, like, I've never watched any of their taped stuff. They do tape it, but...
on, like, Fight, I think.
It's gotta be awful, but, like... I can't imagine it's good. It's just a bunch of dudes, like, running around with handhelds, right? But, like... I don't know. It doesn't bug me as much as it bugs you. Like, I thought it was fine and it was cute. I do miss entrances. I don't mind that it's just a really small crowd, a really small room. I didn't think the camera work was that bad. I didn't think it was noticeably bad in the way that, like, early AEW was.
Sure.
I didn't really have a whole lot of problems with, like, the camera work itself. I was just more so, like, the set that, like, the camera work exposes.
I didn't mind it. The only time I noticed it was later on during a Tim Storm, like, ringside interview. There's, like, a camera directly behind him going, like, just turning around and moving around, and it's so distracting behind him, and that's, like, that's a thing where I was like, well, why couldn't you just have this interview, like, 2 feet over so that wasn't in the background? But, like, I don't know. It didn't bug me that much.
The last thing that, like, I really have to say in terms of, like, I promise I'll try and get off of this point, that this will, like, put it to bed for me, is the... Outside of WWE, the thing that I sort of, like, in my head compare this to the most as, like, a pre-taped... show in, like, a studio, for lack of a better term, is, like, Lucha Underground.
Yeah.
Which, like, the production and the set dressing and the, like, camera work and, like, the entire setup and, like, the presentation, and they have entrances that aren't, like, big coming through a curtain, but they have entrances. And it was, like, and obviously I don't want, like, this super serious NWA to be, like, spooky vampire skeletons and, like,
no, but
shit
like
that.
The camera work and set design on Lucha is amazing.
And
just
it's
impeccable.
So well thought out. And it's, like, so many of the things, like, the, you know, I'm sure that, like, the desk that Matt Stryker and Vampiro sit at is just as shitty and just as close to the ring as the desk that Jim Cornette and Jim Cornette's son are sitting at in NWA Power, but, like, the rest of the setting makes the Lucha Underground version look way less rinky-dink because they, like, I'm sure they're working in, like, a similarly sized fucking studio warehouse.
Mm.
I'm sure that they, like, you can't tell me that the first season of Lucha Underground had, like, a huge budget. Like, it was on some, like, super, super niche cable network.
But I think it's by... design, though. Like, I think,
sure.
I think, like, everything that they did on this show, and I thought it was, I don't know, I liked it, because, like, especially, like, now with the landscape, like, you really have to differentiate yourself, and I felt like I was watching a different show.
Totally.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I felt like I was watching something unique, cool, and I noticed all that stuff, and it never really, like, hit my ear bad, right? Like, I was just, everything I was seeing, I was like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
We're like, that's a nice change. Yeah. And like, I felt like all the steps were very on purpose. And Billy Corgan being such an old school wrestling fan, I'm sure he was very mindful of all those things. So yeah, like, you know, I'm sure Lucha Underground didn't have a huge budget for the first season, but mm-hmm. they were going for a different presentation. I think NWA went for their own presentation, and I think they nailed it.
It could just be like me needing to adjust, you know, like and sort of like get in the mindset.
But it's weird, like it's weird for me because it reminds me a lot of WCW Saturday Night, which was like a studio show. Like they shot of Orlando every week, and very similar. Like they had like Mean Gene over in like the interview station, and then they had like I think the announcers were done like remotely or whatever. Yeah. But it was the same kind of deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
We get a little. Like flashback here, a little montage promo package, like sort of like video package for Tim Storm.
So sorry, you're just skipping the end of that match and the bald head rating for it?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, seriously, I can't believe you did that.
The thing that got me about this match was that they just talk about Eli Drake for the whole, like, for the entire half of the match. They don't even talk about Caleb Connolly at all until he has this short burst of energy and offense. But it was so obvious when Drake beats him. I was like, cool. Like, couldn't see that fucking coming. Yeah. I just felt like they did a huge disservice to this young boy.
But the stakes were so high.
Yeah.
The age of squash matches are back. I'm all about it.
They're bringing squash matches back to studio wrestling, and they're bringing studio wrestling back to you.
I gave it 2.5 bolts.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now we get a little video package for good old Tim Storm, which like explains this story of his feud with Nick Aldis.
Yeah, he's just an old guy, I guess.
He was way older than I was expecting him to be.
His grandpa.
But, I thought they did a pretty good job sort of explaining, like, what the feud is, what the stipulation is. Like, it was a thing where, especially with the first two matches being squash matches, with, like, it was so obvious who was going to win. Like, this was kind of nice to be like, all right, I know that there's going to be one thing on this show with some stakes, something interesting for me.
They told a good story of, like, the old gunslinger, you know, his last hurrah, and, like, you know, if you lose this match, you don't get any more title shots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's got, like, one last rally, and it's like, I beat you before.
Yeah.
That's how I know I can win. You know, so I think with that, they told a good story. Tim Storm's kind of like a generic old dude. So, I guess on a personal level, I didn't get too invested in him. He's a school teacher and stuff. He had a cute story.
I love that he's a school teacher for some... That had, like, huge sway over my interpretation of him. And he has, like... really, in one interview, I think for this interview, like promo segment, his eyes look very White Walker dead-y. But then later on, he just has gorgeous blue eyes. I was piercing. Just like, whoa, what a like attractive old man. Like,
I'd like to be in the eye of the storm.
And then all of that is interrupted by Bobby Moynihan playing a wrestler.
Okay, what? Who?
Joe Sivas.
To go back to my SNL joke from earlier.
Joe Sivas.
I said angry dude in black high waist undies because I just didn't know. I just didn't know who he was, and he just never said his name ever again.
He just wants Storm.
Yeah, you know whose name he did say?
Storm.
Yeah.
A different Storm.
Yeah.
Not Tony Storm or Lance Storm.
But well, he got a Storm.
Yeah. He got, there are too many Storms in wrestling. Retire that name, because I'm getting confused here.
He wanted Tim Storm, and then another Storm by the name of James Mother Effing Storm.
A.K.A. Thick AJ Styles.
I was very into it, I
would say. Do you think he has AJ tattooed on his ribs in a bolder font?
Double AJ.
he comes out, and... Because Bobby Moynihan keeps yelling, bring me Tim Storm, and then that he starts yelling, bring me Storm, and then James Storm comes out.
Yeah.
And he's like, you got a Storm, baby, what do you know. That was pretty cool.
It's fine.
I like that. That hyped me up. That
was good. Well, they start to go back fighting, to the, and then they kind of it carries backstage, and we don't see.
James Storm was like, "Go back to your desk job." Like, it was some big fucking insult. I work a desk job. You piece of shit.
Know your audience.
That's me.
I thought that was a good way to like introduce your sort of like mid-card champion, though. Right?
Like, yeah, because James Storm came off as like a real tough guy here.
Yeah, well, and it was a thing where it's like Nick Aldis had like mentioned him in his promo off the top. Yep. So it's like you've already heard about this guy, and then he comes out, sort of solidifies himself as like, I'm a fighting champ. Like, you, this asshole, like, you're out here, you haven't done anything to deserve a title shot, but I will still come out and fight you just because, like, I believe in this company. Like, very, he's just like out here being like, I'm a good guy, but I'm an ass kicker. Yeah. Like, I felt like that was a very good sort of like show don't tell of character building within wrestling, which like we get so little of in other promotions.
Yeah, and the way the NWA always treated the secondary title, or I guess the way that they want to treat it, is the person with this title is always like the perennial kind of number one contender
for the
big belt, which makes them the second best guy legitimately in the company.
Oh. That's cool. I like that.
So, and then like there's always like kind of a side story with a chase going on, which I think is great because it legitimizes that belt.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
And I'll like, you know, like, and I think James Storm is a perfect guy to have this on at first. Yeah. Even though I'm not the biggest James Storm fan, but.
Well, and that really makes it like.
I like him.
I just want to throw some shade on.
Nah. Him, so. Trying to goad me.
Because I think sometimes it feels like a U.S. title run or an intercontinental title run in WWE can often feel like sort of a consolation prize.
Yeah.
You know, like, sorry, Nakamura. You know, like, we got Brock Lesnar has to be the champion right now, but we'll give you this belt, you know? Yeah. And so, like, having the secondary title be a number one contender to the top title as opposed to, like, yeah, you know, like, if I haven't watched main roster WWE in a while because there's so much fucking wrestling going on right now. But, like, Brock Lesnar is, like, the champ right now, and I think Nakamura is still the Intercontinental. It's like the guy who's feuding with Nakamura for his belt isn't going to be anywhere near whoever's feuding with Brock for his belt. And, like, Nakamura is not necessarily even going to be on the level with whoever's feuding with Brock for his belt. So this is nice that it, like, makes everything feel a little bit more streamlined.
At a time where, like, you know, the belt doesn't really make the man or the woman anymore, right? Like, it's just, like, they're just playing kind of hot potato with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where it's like, you know, if Nakamura was the IC champion, like, even though his stock has come up since he was on main event, you know, just kind of doing nothing.
Yep.
You know, it really should do work to elevate him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? All right, so F, Mary, Kill. Tim Storm, James Storm, and Lance Storm.
Ooh.
Who's Lance Storm?
Lance from Calgary. Storm. From ECW and WCW.
Alberta, Canada.
Oh, that giant one. No, I'm thinking of Luger.
Yeah, he's the small one with the high and tight. The red pants.
All right, F. All Mary, right, Kill, ready. James Storm, Tim Storm, and Lex Luger.
Kill Lex Luger! Kill Lex Luger!
All right, Lauren, go.
Remember, I would.
Your mom listens to this.
Oh, yeah.
Can I marry Tony Storm?
No, let me talk. So you would. I would fuck. James Mother Effing Storm.
Uh-huh.
I would marry sweet old man Tim Storm, and I would kill the other Storm.
Lance Storm?
Yes.
Lance Thunderstorm?
Yeah, you could try. One of the best
nothing.
Technical wrestlers.
He's nothing. He's nothing. Do you have any strong opinions about that, Campbell?
No, not particularly.
All right. Is anyone else going to play, or was it just directed at me?
It was at everyone.
I said I would kill Lex Luger and marry Tony Storm. That's my...
She wasn't in this.
Guess
nobody wants to know what I would do.
Well, yeah, what would you do, Josh?
I do want to know what you would do.
I would marry Lance Thunderstorm.
Nice.
I would kill Tim Storm to put him out of
that's
his misery.
Sweet old... Oh, that's terrible.
You know James Storm's going to get it.
Oh, yeah.
You know he's getting this storm.
Yeah.
He's going to get the smoke.
Oh, my God. I'm glad that he's everyone's F.
Yeah. Next up, we got another squash match, another tag squash match between Wildcard and a team who I didn't even bother to write their name down.
It was Mims. Danny White and Mims.
Mims.
Sure.
The thing that I really wanted to mention about this was that the Wildcards enter in evil kilts.
Much like Sheamus and Cesaro.
Yeah. And except they say, like, they say something. I'm pretty sure one of them says evil on it.
Yeah, nice. You're definitely right. It had, like, a pentagram on it.
Yeah. And one of them keeps it on for the whole thing.
Yeah, the dude who keeps his kilt on was just, like, fucking throat chopping for the whole, like, that's the only move that he did, was he just, like, chopped the other guy's throat a lot.
He looked like Gerard Butler.
I thought that was cool.
That was Bram from TNA Impact. Yeah, so there's a big online joke for a long time that, like, Bram had signed a new multi-year deal. There's, like, one account, like, I think the TNA Impact account accidentally posted, like, 100 times in a row that Bram has signed. And so there's, like, this ongoing Twitter joke that Bram has signed a new multi-year deal.
Okay.
Oh,
Impact.
So is that why they win this squash match, and then they go to cut their promo, and, like, it's at this point where I was kind of like, I thought this was perfectly done, because it was at this point where I was like, we've now seen, like, four people basically cut the same throwback old school promo. Yeah. And I was like, all right, I need something new. And that's, like, when they dropped in Eddie Kingston.
Yeah, which, right? I thought was perfect, because Eddie Kingston's the best.
He was good when he first
came out. I was like, he sucks, because he was making, like, dumb jokes or whatever.
But
he just delivered a great promo after
and he
that.
Called that guy Bram, yeah. Right? Which, like, I didn't get at the time, but everyone in the audience went, ooh!
Oh, that's his old name!
So yeah, like, that was pretty cool. I like how much Eddie Kingston says dog.
Yeah, he says, you don't speak for guys like me, you don't speak for underdogs, you don't speak for stray dogs, and you sure as hell don't speak for outlaws.
Sorry, there's dogs.
Water.
Brooklyn.
Bwam.
Dogs.
And then Homicide shows up. So these guys are all ex-Impact, right? Like,
yeah, so, like, Homicide's, like, an old, like, ROH Impact. Like, okay. He's, like, a legit dude.
Cool.
But, yeah, that's exciting. That's another big acquisition as far as I'm concerned. Those guys were tearing it up in Impact for the last couple of years.
I'm going to say it right now. Eddie Kingston was basically the only person on this show that I felt interested in seeing again.
Yeah.
Like, after all of this, I felt like nobody gave me enough to want to come back except for, like, he just had, like, a really interesting charisma that I, and, like, felt like such a fish out of water within the context of everybody else.
Yeah, it always feels like Kingston's shooting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it feels like he really, like, has no business being there, and, like, they accidentally signed him without knowing what they were getting into, and then he's just like, oh, shit, he's doing Eddie Kingston things.
So Wildcard squares off with Eddie Kingston and Homicide, but that's interrupted by the return of James Storm and
Josevius.
Yep. And they come in, like, sort of brawl out into commercial break.
That last match got two bald heads, by the way.
Okay, perfect.
Okay.
It's so hard to keep up with, like, the regimented bald head rating when everything transitions into a promo.
Hey, don't worry about it. I'll just throw it in there.
I appreciate
it.
Don't worry about it. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
You know.
It's not like it's a big deal on this podcast or anything.
Well, it's the gold head.
It's a gold bald
gold
standard.
Gold standard of wrestling podcast rating systems.
It's a gold bond. Jeez. On the undercarriage of this.
I gotta get that tattooed on the inside of my hand so I don't fuck it up every time I try and say it.
Make note on your phone.
That would be very impressive. I would give you 5 bald heads if you did that.
Oh, nice. Yeah. You haven't given 5 bald heads yet.
You would be the first.
So this commercial break is kind of like NWA advertising for themselves.
Yep.
Which is, like,
I loved it.
I'm already 45 minutes into watching. Like, it's not like it's at the start of a different wrestling-related YouTube show. It's 45 minutes into this YouTube show that I've already watched.
Sure, but, like, everyone does that. And also, I loved this ad.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it.
It's great.
It sums up exactly what NWA is so perfectly, Was that the legit "it's still real to me, damn it" guy who was being interviewed?
Yep.
He did a fantastic promo for NWA.
You know that guy's been looking for redemption for the last 20 years, and this was his moment.
It was amazing.
They should hire him as a manager for the Dawsons, because he cut a better promo than they did.
Yeah, and then it was followed by, maybe I'll save this for later. Are we going to do like closing thoughts about the whole tape?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Like, tape episode?
Like how we always do.
Okay, I'm going to save it. Never mind. Let's move on to the James Storm.
James T. Storm.
James motherfucking Storm.
Just super kicking.
Yeah.
Black tights in
so
the face.
So they chase each other around.
They Benny Hill for 5 minutes.
They Benny Hill.
They jump into the crowd for like 4 seconds and everyone's like, whoa, oh my God. But he's
a little
goes,
much.
Woo. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. It was like, it was so ridiculous. It was so slapsticky. And like, and then they finally get into the ring, or no, Josephus gets into the ring and he motions to the ref and he's got his hands behind his back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's like, oh, we've seen Josephus do this before. We're a lonely challenge James Storm if he puts his hands behind his back.
Yeah.
And turns around.
Yeah, he doesn't even want to get in the ring with James Storm. And then he does turn his back. And then he, like, fakes him out of several times that he's going to run at him. And then he do. And then he gets super kicked in the face.
He sure do. And then he sure do got a super kick in the mush.
It was a great one.
So, yeah. So, James Storm busts out a beautiful super kick. Just pops Josephus.
Yeah, Josephus. He's right got in five the face. Bald heads. No, this has got one bald head. This was I don't even know if I can give a bald head rating on this match. It lasted about 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And Josephus, though, he could sell a super kick.
Yeah, he sold a super kick.
James Storm could throw one.
Yep.
And
well, then there's...
he can. Throwing at me anytime. Yeah. I'll play that.
There's like a little post-match kind of... James Storm gets... Sevius, I keep wanting to call him Bobby Moynihan because that's what I wrote in my notes the whole time.
The universe knows.
This match did nothing to dissuade me that it was just like an SNL sketch about wrestling with all the what with the fucking running around. But yeah, so Storm gets Sevius back up and super kicks him. But before Sevius can fall, James Storm puts like Sevius's thumb in his mouth,
like
a little
baby.
Like
he's a little baby.
Whoa, I must have missed that.
Which to me is like the least Jim Cornette thing.
Are you kidding me? That is the most Jim Cornette
thing. How is that different from like a Hadouken? Like,
you know what I was hoping? I was hoping somebody was going to throw a grenade in a match tonight. I would have lost my mind for Jim Cornette to be on commentary here. And like somebody throws like a fake grenade at the other one and they pretend to blow up and then they start doing spells on each other. Jim Cornette would have shit his fucking pants.
Praying for a force choke slam.
No, but like that's very like old school wrestling where it's like, well, Bobby the Brain Heenan like used to get beat up and then put in a weasel costume, suck in your thumb, like all that stuff. That's
like kind of humiliation-y.
Yeah, that's all very 80s.
That sucks.
Sure does.
Hey, don't kink shame, all right? Some people, humiliation.
It's all about like playing on fragile masculinity. I hate it.
Yeah, have you been watching this show?
There's men. This is real men.
This is where the real men are. No cosplayers.
Yeah, thanks, Drake. As in Eli Drake, not Drake Drake.
Yeah, thank you for real Drake, non-ironically.
All right, then there's another Tim Storm promo pack.
Yeah, I don't know if this guy needed like three of these, huh?
I was into it. I liked
got the
every
idea.
One. This one was really funny too.
Guys. So this is Mama Storm's baby boy, okay?
Yeah.
Which one?
No, this is Mama Storm's baby boy.
Yeah, which Mama Storm though? Are they
which
all,
baby boy?
They're all, no, they're all related.
In kayfabe, it's like all of the Storms are
it's
from
like
one
the Dudleys.
Family. They're like the Dudleys.
They all have different dads.
Welcome to Stormville. Yeah. I would
Papa Storms in Canada, in Calgary.
There's an Australian Papa Storm.
There's an Australian Papa Storm.
All right, you know what? I would totally watch the fuck out of a stable that was just everybody whose last name was Storm.
Yeah. And then he starts quoting Eminem.
Yeah. He starts quoting Eminem so poorly, right?
You had one chance.
Yeah.
Would you grab it or just let it slip? or whatever he said.
Yeah. And then I think, doesn't someone on commentary say, like, make a spaghetti joke or something? Like, or...
I don't know.
Okay.
I didn't catch that.
None, all of this is going over my head.
He started singing 8 Mile.
But like, you only have one shot, blurb, don't stir,
yeah, mom's spaghetti.
I feel like
yeah.
Kai Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
I feel like I understood what the storyline of this feud was after like the first video package.
This was beating a dead horse a bit.
When they did the second one, it was like, okay, I'll give this to you. You want to like further my understanding of this character? You want to make the belt seem really important? When they got to the third one, it's like, oh, you think I'm dumb? Like, you know that I've just been watching Shorty Gable and Baron Corbin for months. You think I'm a fucking idiot.
You think I'm a fucking merc. I thought this promo did less for him. I would have been okay, like you said, with the first two.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was invested at that point. This one kind of made him seem like a goober a little bit, you know?
No, oh, I liked it.
Okay, well.
And then it's...
I was rooting for him. Old
goober.
Granddaddy husband, Storm. Father, grandfather.
So then we get to the Tim Aldis versus... No, Tim Storm versus Nick Aldis. Holy shit. This has been a long one.
Nick Storm versus Tim Aldis.
I don't even know.
Shit, that's confusing.
We finally get to the Tim Storm. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. I can't do it while you watch. We finally get to the Tim Storm versus Nick Aldis match that we've been building to for like the whole thing.
Oh man, it took us so long to get here.
Well, it's like and this is the thing where it's like from like the episode is called Aldis versus Storm. Mm-hmm. The opening promo is like mostly about that. We get three promos in between, and it's like really hard to build to a big fight feel when there's no entrance music and when like the guys are just like already standing in the ring. Like it's like, I would have been fine with no entrance music whatsoever for the entire show except for this match. Like, do something to make it seem like a bigger deal.
You know what every promotion should do, and they should steal this from NXT, is the lights off with, like, the spotlights in the ring.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
That is, like, if there's ever a big fight feel mood that I get in wrestling, I love that they did it all during Clash of Champions or whatever.
Yeah, they did it for Clash of Champions.
I was like... Every promotion should do this for their title.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like that would totally eliminate the fact that there's no entrances or anything like that. If you had like the slow ding, 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 lights go out, two spotlights, slow announcements. Anyway, that's my thoughts.
Oh, yeah. Agree.
Yeah, that would be awesome. This was, I thought, like a pretty good match.
It's fine.
From Lauren?
I saw the saddest crossbody from the fucking Storm.
So there were like one or two moments where he was like old and crickety.
Yeah.
But I was so appreciative. Like, I was like, he is miles ahead of like Undertaker or other people.
Oh,
like, he can move and go. Like, he seems, I don't know, I thought he seemed like believably old man fit and old man gassed at different points.
As an aside here, who do we think the best and worst currently active wrestlers over 50 are?
Hunter is probably up there.
Jushin Thunder Liger.
I'm going to say Minoru Suzuki is definitely
list. Yeah. What am I thinking? Definitely.
Like, Minoru Suzuki is definitely the best wrestler over 50.
I'm trying to think who else is a wrestler over 50, like, still, like...
What about, you got, like, Ray? Like, how old is... I guess
Ray's not quite up there, but you there's a couple of Mexican dudes. Like, you got, like, Dr. Wagner Jr. can still go from what... Like, his run on Lucha Underground
was pretty
good.
How old is Chris Daniels?
I don't know. I think my worst would be... Goldberg's got to be over 50, right?
And
he's
that guy, though.
Like,
you think he's worse than The Undertaker?
She's got you there. Yeah, okay.
I think she's got you there.
It's a tie between the main event of Crown Jewel.
Yeah, The Undertaker cannot move.
Now, in my opinion, Undertaker retired when Roman Reigns beat him at WrestleMania, 36, 35?
I think he should have retired before that. Like, I don't want to be in pain watching him. Like, I feel so bad.
Yeah.
No.
He always looks like he's gassed, reaching for something, carried by the other guy. And every time he's in there with, like, an old guy like Goldberg, you know, I know there's other things in play there, but I mean, like, I'm just like, what am I watching here? Like, yeah. Why?
Yeah.
Why are we doing this?
I didn't get that feeling from Tim Storm.
Yeah, I'm like trying to say that in the grand scheme of things, like, Tim Storm is not that bad, right? He's no Minoru Suzuki, but he is certainly no Undertaker. Yeah, I think that holds up. I gotta say, the figure four is like their sharpshooter, right?
Yeah.
Like that thing where it's like whenever WWE comes to Canada, whenever we go see them in Toronto, somebody busts out a sharpshooter and the entire crowd just fucking loses it because it's like the Canadian submission.
Yeah.
Like that's how I, like when they do the figure four in this match and the crowd fucking loses it, it's like, oh, because you're a bunch of old nerds.
Yeah.
And you don't know that the reverse figure four is better than the figure four.
Yeah. I think all this suffers if he doesn't have a good dancing partner. I think all this is a fine technical wrestler.
Would you say he's a good hand?
No. I wouldn't even say that. I think Aldis really needs the right partner in there. So it's like Aldis is carried by kind of a big man style and, like, you know, who he's in there with. And I just, this match was a perfect example of, like, this was Aldis's match to carry, and I don't think he did it.
Mm.
You know, I thought the match was fine.
No.
But I mean, like, I think, like, he needed to do more. Like, if he's, like, really this technical whatever, whatever, I mean, he should have been, like, putting on a display. And, like, so many things were, like Aldis did a boss crab at one point, and it really looked like he was struggling with it. And then he just kind of lazily, like, kind of, like, he should have been, like, selling the hell out of that. And, like, I don't know. Is there something about, like, Aldis and the way he works? He's fine, I mean, for whatever. But I think, I don't know.
I think it's like this needed to be like a big coming out for Aldis for like being sort of the face of the company.
Yeah.
Putting this new product out to a new audience, they really needed to have like the focus of this match needed to be Aldis's coming out and cementing himself. What it really felt like was the swan song for Storm.
Yeah.
Right. Which I thought Storm did a pretty good job in this match. I liked the sort of like desperation. I need to win this title by any means necessary. Going for the low blow, like I thought
I
was good.
That surprised me.
That was a great
me.
Spot. Yeah,
It was sick. That was like another moment where I was like, oh, who's the heel? Who's the face? I don't know.
Yeah, but I think Cornette did a good job explaining that too, where he was like, oh, you know, like, you know, he usually wouldn't do that, but, you know, he knows what's on the line for him, you know, and, like, all this stuff. Like, I thought, like,
and that,
they explained it away pretty well.
Totally.
That makes
I loved
the
it.
Title seem like a bigger deal. It adds depth and dimension. Like, it adds depth and dimension to Storm as a character, which in the pilot episode of your program means that, like, there is room for depth and, like, dimensionality with all of your roster.
Sure.
That, again, like, Lauren, what you were saying before, that it's not just cut and dry cartoon good guys and bad guys. That, like, this did a really good job of setting a precedent where it's, like, Tim Storm can go for the low blow, but you can still root for him because you understand why he did that.
Yeah.
In a way that, like, if someone goes for the low blow in NXT, they are just, like, codified as the bad guy.
Yeah.
Right? So I did like that about it. I thought it was pretty adequate. Do you have a rating for this one?
Yeah, three-ish bald heads.
Three-ish.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out where I laid on this one, so I just gave it three-ish.
Yeah, yeah. It was like the match itself was fine.
Yeah, I liked a lot of components of the match, but again, I thought, you know,
totally. Yeah. Usually we like to close things off with a little bit of some high spots and some botched spots. So a little honorable mention, shout out to something that we didn't cover before, or something that we just like really wanted to drive home. Lauren, you have anything there?
I mean, I don't know if this is the right place to bring this up, but I really liked the interview segment that was just people talking about NWA and like talking up NWA.
Mm-hmm.
Your
favorite part of NWA was the ad for NWA.
No, that wasn't my favorite part. I just don't know where else to put this.
Okay.
There's a part where they're interviewing a person, like just a random fan, and he says, and I quote, "It's like going 30 years in the past with modern wrestlers," in reference to NWA Power. And I was like, when I watched that, I was like, that is exactly accurate, and why this show isn't for me and it just doesn't speak to me is because I don't have any concept of the past of 30 years ago. Yeah. I have no idea where wrestling was, and I didn't like it then because I didn't watch it then. So I can never like this in the way, like, the whole show is designed to be a nostalgia pop. And yeah. I mean, I'm fine. Like, I kind of liked it, and I can understand why other people would like it, but it's definitely just not my cup of tea, and I don't think it's meant to be. That's all it's going for is nostalgia.
Mm. Is that kind of your botch spot?
I don't know. That can be both.
Okay. Josh?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was the exact reason why I kind of liked it was because it was such a throwback, and I was like, oh, I like this. This is great. I'm glad this exists. You know, just like the old school interview style, and like the way, like, you know, Man with the Stick with, like, you know, the interview and asking, like, all, like, the really lame kind of questions and letting the person cut the promo, and then they're putting themselves over, and they're putting over, you know, this is where the real men are, and, like, all
what?
Yeah. If you smell what Eli's cooking, it's like, but I really like that. I tickled my nostalgia bone, like kind of Lauren said there. And I don't know, the botch spot of the night, I guess, was fucking low rent Bludgeon Brothers.
The Dawsons.
Dawsons didn't buy those ones at all.
No,
you know.
Yeah, they sucked.
They sucked.
I think my high spot was, like, definitely the promos. Yeah. And, like, just the way that the promos were, like, so clearly, like, and it's a thing where it's, like, they felt kind of samey. It's hard to believe that, like, any of the wrestlers were writing their own stuff.
Yeah.
It definitely feels like they have a writing team, but, like, a writing team that has such a good idea of, like, what the functionality of a promo should be,
mm-hmm.
of, like, explaining who the character is and why they're doing what they're doing while simultaneously making other characters seem important,
yep.
you know, or like other wrestlers seem like a big deal. Mm. And I feel like for the most part, every promo did that really well.
Sure.
Eddie Kingston really stood out in that regard. And then it wasn't in this episode, but I've seen it kicking around on like Facebook and shit. If you can look up the Ricky Sparks promo that he cuts on the next episode of Power is like also really good for that.
Okay.
I think my botch spot is also like kind of along the same lines with Lauren's, like just that it's a thing where like it doesn't really appeal to me, mostly because I don't have the context of that nostalgia, and that a lot of this felt like, you know, when you hear someone be like, I was born in the wrong generation, like I wish I could go back to the 60s, and what they think it means is, like, cute fashion and going to Woodstock, but what it actually means is that you don't have an iPhone and there's no black people or women involved in anything.
Jesus Christ.
That's what this show was.
I mean,
like,
yeah.
No one noticed that this was, like, really white. This was, like, really, like,
definitely a really white show.
Mims.
Like,
you got Mims.
Yeah, you got Mims. You got Homicide.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, especially for, like, a good old boys southern, this is where the men are, was just like, ooh, pump the brakes. Like, let's fucking figure something out here.
Yeah,
right?
there's a good middle ground between what you're going for and what you land on, you
like,
know?
Do they have a women's division?
They do. They have a women's champion.
And she wasn't on the premiere of their show in any capacity.
She was on the next show, if I'm not
still, like, for
sure,
if I'm coming in totally fresh,
yeah,
I've never seen this before, and you want to put your best foot forward, and like, did you're telling me they needed the fucking Dawson's squash match over just like letting me know the fact that they have a women's champion?
Hey man, the Dawsons were pretty good.
I don't know. It was like, that was a real fucking sticking point for me, I think, was how
I agree. Like, I think on your first show, you should display every champion that you have,
mm-hmm.
and just like kind of establish the knowledge. I mean, whatever. Like, I don't know what they're going for. We'll see how it plays out, but yeah. I'm with you on that one.
It's something that, like, so here's, I guess, like the question of like, not so much like, did you like it or not, but like, are you going to tune in again? Are you going to like try and catch up and watch going forward?
I'll probably throw on the odd episode on YouTube if I see it and I got nothing else to do.
Mm-hmm. Lauren, what about you?
No, there's like too much happening. There's there are too many great wrestling shows. It's hard for me to add this one to my list of shit that I need to watch every week.
That's super fair. If they're in a vacuum, if there weren't, like, if AEW hadn't aired or whatever, if it was just, like, did this interest you enough that you would go out of your way to watch
it? You're on a desert island.
Like, well, just
you
like,
have a laptop and you can only subscribe to one channel. That one channel is NWA.
No,
would you watch? No,
I don't know. I didn't super like it. Like, one of the things I love promos, obviously. Like, that's one of the parts that's most exciting about wrestling. But I didn't like the actual wrestling in this show very much. Fair. And I don't think that they were trying to get me to like their wrestling. Like, it was all in 2-minute segments. Like, there was no match longer than a couple minutes. And they weren't super flashy or showy. Like, there were only, like, one or two people who I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah, but they were very laser-focused with the direction, like, the audience that they were going for with this one. So,
I think I'm at a point right now where I'm like, if I'm scrolling through, like, Instagram and I see, like, a video of a promo, I'm going to watch that because all the promos on this show are great, but I don't give a shit about any of the storylines. Outside of Eddie Kingston, there's no one that I really care about seeing, like, their progression of character further. Like, I thought this did a really good job at being exactly what it wanted to be, but I thought it did a really bad job of trying to bring in anyone who isn't already invested in that.
Yeah, I'll give it a chance probably in a couple months just to see what they're up to.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then if, you know, they're up to anything interesting, I'm open to it.
And but. I mean, like, who knows? Maybe if they do something that just, like, fucking rocks the wrestling world by and large, we'll revisit this. Like, it's not something that I am, like, fundamentally opposed to going back to, but just something that I am, like, not currently interested in going back to.
Yeah. All
right. So I think that kind of sums it up. For our thoughts on NWA Power episode 1. Didn't mean for it to be quite the fucking cookout that it ended up being. We try and stay a little bit more positive usually.
Yeah.
In the meantime,
I don't think we cooked it out that bad. I think we had some fair critiques.
Yeah. It was alright. Yeah. It was a little more negative than I think we usually get. But
the show fucking sucked.
Not as negative as we could get. We'll have something hopefully more positive for you next time. Maybe in the meantime, you can check us out on Facebook at Stone Cold Shots, Twitter
at Stone Cold Shots Podcast,
Instagram at Stone Cold Shots Podcast.
Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and any of other podcasting apps that you may use. Leave a rating and review.
This is
5 stars.
Good one.
Yeah, that was better than the one that we usually do.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll see you later.